from Whitehall to Clearfield, Uniontown to Jeffersonville, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the United States Supreme Court has ruled workers have a constitutional right to refuse to join a labor union. But a Pennsylvania labor union is throwing roadblocks in the path of workers who want to exercise that right. David Osborne of the Fairness Center is here to discuss. Veterans and others can find effective therapy spending time with horses at the Bravehearts Therapeutic Riding and Educational Center. Joe Geiger has Megan Hill McQueenie in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And there is a lot of talk about how state and national government isn't making progress on critical issues. But on her Lincoln Radio Journal commentary, Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania talks about what has been accomplished. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to David Osborne in just a couple of minutes, but first, here are news headlines from patownhall.com. Governor Tom Wolf was sworn in this past week for his second term in office. He gets a new governing partner as John Fetterman replaces Mike Stack in the lieutenant governor's chair. During his inaugural speech, the governor took credit for the state's improving economy. This despite the fact he opposed virtually all the pro-growth policies advocated by the Republican majority in the legislature. The Democratic governor also called for bipartisan cooperation, although his party views itself as the resistance on the national level. The influence of Fetterman, who was supported by Bernie Sanders and ran as a Democratic socialist, remains a wild card as the governor seeks to work with a legislature not only controlled by Republicans, but which got more conservative as a result of last November's elections. Yet another chapter in corruption appears to be developing in the city of Scranton, where the FBI raided Scranton City Hall and the residence of Mayor Bill Courtright. There is little information as to what prompted the raid, but the feds did cart away boxes from the city's licensing, inspections, and permits department. For his part, Courtright denied rumors that he planned on resigning, saying he will continue to serve in office. And Pittsburgh is working on legislation that would trample the Second Amendment rights of gun owners in the city, but Allegheny County District Attorney Stephen Zappala has warned council it does not have authority to pass such restrictions. Zappala cited several cases, including one decided against a former Pittsburgh mayor, which points to the restrictions currently under consideration being unconstitutional. Mayor Bill Petutto dismissed the DA's opinion and said he would continue to pursue efforts to take away residents' gun rights. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. In a landmark ruling last summer, the Supreme Court of the United States affirmed the First Amendment right of public sector workers not to be compelled to join a labor union as a condition of employment. But unions are doing everything possible to prevent workers who want to resign their union membership from doing so. The Fairness Center is litigating one such case here in Pennsylvania. David Osborne is president and chief counsel of the Fairness Center, and he joins us to discuss the case. David, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. David, let's start at the beginning. There was a landmark case that came before the Supreme Court of the United States, Janus v. AFSCME. This had to do with the rights of American workers not to be forced to join a labor union. Can you give us a bit of background on the Janus v. AFSCME case and what the outcome was and its impact?
The Janus case really started about 40 years ago with another case called Abood. The Abood case was a bunch of teachers from Detroit. These teachers were non-members of their union, but were being charged a fee for the union's representation, and that fee just happened to be the same amount as union dues. They thought that that was a violation of their constitutional rights for a couple reasons. First, typically one has the right to associate with whomever they want to associate. The union is like any other organization; it's a private organization. It's got its own ends and its own means. And these folks simply didn't support that as a matter of the First Amendment. But they also thought that it wasn't just the political activities of the union. It was really everything that they did, top to bottom, even their collective bargaining. After all, think of it, when a union goes into a school district to negotiate a contract and they want, say, more benefits for the teachers, higher wages, these may be good things, but the school district has to make trade-offs. They may have to give up, for instance, a new curriculum. They may have to give up new computers. These are trade-offs, and they're political trade-offs. So their point was, top to bottom, this is a political organization that we should not have to pay money to. And this is only relevant in the public sector context. Well, the U.S. Supreme Court, in that old case, Abood, determined that, well, we actually can draw a line here. We can draw a line between those things that we consider to be core collective bargaining activities, like sitting down in negotiations, and these sort of overt political activities, get-out-the-vote campaigns, endorsements, mailers, those kinds of things. And so that's what they did. But the litigants in Abood, the teachers, were correct. It's a very, very hard line to draw. So over the next 40 years, there are a handful of cases where the U.S. Supreme Court sort of had to go back to the drawing board and help people draw those lines. It really took until 2012 until the U.S. Supreme Court started to see, well, you know, there are fundamental problems here. One of the problems was the line drawing is typically done by the unions themselves. They are the ones who determine what's political and what's not, and that's a conflict of interest for them. Then they bring in some auditors to look over that, but the auditors don't make the determination as to whether something's political or not. They just make sure the union did the numbers right. So there were all sorts of problems. In this case, in 2012, really highlighted that. That sparked some interest among some teachers who really wanted to relitigate the basic issue. Really, aren't public sector unions political top to bottom? So a handful of other folks filed lawsuits. In fact, the Fairness Center, where I work, filed a lawsuit of its own for four teachers in Pennsylvania to make the U.S. Supreme Court really go back to the very beginning. Before our litigants could get there, a guy named Mark Janus got there. And the Janus versus AFSCME case ended up doing exactly what many other teachers around the country wanted to do. The U.S. Supreme Court in Janus went back to the very beginning, and they said, you know, public sector unions are inherently political, top to bottom, and nobody should be made to pay money to them. Now, the decision is not about membership, so one has always had the right not to be a member of this public sector union. The issue is, should they have to pay for their representation anyway? And the U.S. Supreme Court said, no, they shouldn't have to. So going forward after Janus, that means that anybody who doesn't want to support their union should have that right to do it.
We are talking with David Osborne, who is president and general counsel of the Fairness Center. And David, with that background and the fact that it is now, as it always should have been, the law of the land that a worker cannot be required to join a labor union as a condition of employment. It is, in fact, a violation of workers' First Amendment rights. Labor unions and their reaction to this, talk a little bit about that. I would assume that labor unions didn't just say, well, we'll just comply with this and we'll let anybody out who wants. Have they done that, or are labor unions trying to find ways to get around this ruling?
Well, it seems, and I'll talk to you in a minute about a guy named Francisco Molina who sort of experienced this firsthand. He's one of our clients. I think what the unions did after Janus is decide that, obviously, we can't go against the U.S. Supreme Court precedent. We're not going to make non-members pay fees unconstitutionally. But really, the Janus case, in their view at least, didn't say anything about how to deal with active members. So there are public sector unions have hundreds of thousands of members throughout the country. If they could just hold on to those members as long as possible, they can continue to take dues out of their paychecks and continue to fund their operations. Francisco Molina, he's a social worker in Lehigh County, had to experience this emphasis firsthand. He was a member of the union, but in June, after the decision in Janus was issued, decided that, you know what, I don't want to fund my union anymore. And if I have the right not to do it, you know, I'm going to write in a letter and I'm going to withdraw from the union. Unfortunately, after a brief talk with his employer, he was directed to talk to the union about this. And what did the union say? Well, he wrote him a letter. He sent it certified mail. They certainly got the letter, but he got absolutely nothing in response from the union. And this is stonewalling. It's a pretty familiar union tactic when it comes to those who are wanting to leave the union. Now, it's clear to anyone who's sort of paying attention to these issues that ignoring a public sector union's resignation is a First Amendment violation, too. I mean, what Francisco was trying to do was to disassociate from the union in accordance with his rights under Janus. Unfortunately, we found out since then that the union is taking the position that a statute in Pennsylvania authorizes this kind of behavior. That statute is called maintenance of membership. That sounds like gobbledygook probably to a lot of people, but to those who negotiate contracts in Pennsylvania, it is a term that they well understand. What maintenance of membership means in Pennsylvania is that a public sector union can require members to maintain their membership throughout the life, almost entirely, of a collective bargaining agreement, sometimes a collective bargaining agreement that lasts years. The only right that members have under that statute is the right to resign in the last 15 days of a collective bargaining agreement. So if you're a public sector union, public sector union member who's subject to a maintenance and membership clause, as soon as your union authorizes this, apparently you've got to go into your Google Calendar and set up a reminder for yourself in those last 15 days to send in a resignation. Effectively, what it does is it keeps people members for a very long time. I've heard, this is anecdotal, from many folks who've tried to resign as members who, in those last 15 days, you know, something will go wrong. The letter that they send in is just not to the union's liking. It goes to the wrong P.O. box, whatever it is. One simple slip-up during those 15 days takes long enough to correct to where you've lost that opportunity. That 15-day window is closed.
We are going to be talking more about this. David, an exciting development. Our listeners hear us talking a lot at this time of year about the annual Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, which is coming up on April 5th and 6th at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill, which is right outside of Harrisburg. And David, we're going to have Mark Janus himself speaking at this conference, and you are then going to moderate a panel discussion on Janus and its implications and rights. So we're very excited that Mark Janus himself is going to be with us for the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, which, by the way, it's paleadershipconference.org if you would like to attend. In the meantime, David, tell us a bit about the Fairness Center.
Sure. The Fairness Center is a nonprofit public interest law firm. We offer free legal services to those who have been hurt by their public sector union officials. And the reason for our existence, Loman, is that if it weren't for free representation, many of these kinds of very good principled cases would never be brought. That's because Francisco Molina, for instance, is litigating with his union over hundreds of dollars in dues, not thousands. And you could burn through hundreds of dollars in just a few hours with a private sector attorney.
And where can folks go on the web to learn more?
You want to go to fairnesscenter.org. Fairnesscenter.org.
David Osborne of the Fairness Center. David, thank you for being with us.
Sure. Thank you, Loman.
Equine therapy, where people spend time with horses in a tranquil setting, has proven to be highly effective for those dealing with a variety of mental health issues. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation talks with Megan Hill McQueenie from the Bravehearts Therapeutic Riding and Education Center about their program. Joe?
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Megan, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Megan, would you share with your listeners the inspiration that had this organization, Bravehearts, become a living entity serving all kinds of different needs?
Bravehearts came about in 2002. The founder of the organization, her name is Marge Gunner, and she actually boarded her horse at the farm that we now operate out of. And she was dealing with ovarian cancer, and she found that the farm was very therapeutic for her while she was dealing with her cancer and healing and going through chemotherapy and such. And most especially her favorite horse, Max, who was a Lipizzan stallion. She recalled a certain time while she was going through dealing with cancer and reflected on her horse literally just wrapping his neck around her and hugging her and holding her. And as she survived cancer, she began to think about why she had survived and what God's calling for her was, why she was basically a statistical miracle, and what she was left here on earth to still do. And she felt a calling to start a therapeutic riding program. She didn't have a lot of experience in doing one. She really had to learn everything from the ground up. And she got involved a dear friend of hers. His name was Dr. Rolf Gunner. At the time, they weren't married. They were just friends. And Dr. Gunner was a Korean War veteran. And he began to come to the farm and learn about Marge's ideas of starting a therapeutic riding program. And he felt that the farm had also great healing properties on himself, and it just really quieted his own mind and heart and soul. And he believed there was a healing vortex at the farm. And his vision was to see how Brave Hearts could not just help children and adults with various diagnoses, but he was very much focused on how Brave Hearts could serve military veterans. And so he was the visionary that had this concept of equine therapy becoming available for vets.
Megan, that's such a strong testimony to the power, the healing forces of horses. And we know it's a growing therapy throughout the country. Anybody who's ever had a horse or been around a horse can identify with the calming and the healing that you can feel just being around an animal of that kind of size and nature. What was the inspiration for the name Brave Hearts?
Marge came up with the idea of the name Brave Hearts, and she just believed that each person who would one day come to the farm, regardless of whatever they were dealing with, whether it was needing physical healing or emotional healing or cognitive healing or even spiritual healing, she believed that everyone who came to the organization was brave. And she believed that it was the brave hearts of people going through what they're going that would really make up the entire organization, the heart of the organization.
Makes a lot of sense. This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Megan Hill McQueenie with Brave Hearts Therapeutic Riding and Educational Center, located in Harvard, Illinois. Megan, as I mentioned, we don't want to minimize what you're doing therapeutically for the population at large, but talk a little bit about the services you're providing to the United States military and their families.
Brave Hearts, the entity, that the nonprofit, actually started in 2002, and by 2007, we had really started to look seriously and started to begin services to reach veterans. And so since 2007 to today, thousands of veterans have come to our farm and received equine activities and therapies of all different kinds. And it's our mission of our nonprofit to make sure that every single veteran who comes to our farms never has to pay for any program, any service, any equine service, equine program that they receive. So just case in point, last year alone, in 2018, we serviced 832 individual veterans, and we delivered 19,520 equine sessions. So all 19,500 of those sessions, every single one of those sessions was at no cost to those 832 veterans. So every time a veteran comes out to the farm, they don't pay for anything. We have veterans who come from all different ages, all different wars, with all different needs, and we just try to make sure that we can accommodate those.
Megan, if you could reach down inside and think of a particular powerful story of a relationship that occurred between a veteran and a horse in your program.
One of my most favorite stories is an individual who came to Brave Hearts really struggling with substance abuse and addiction and PTSD, and kind of everything around his whole life for so many years was really crumbling. His marriage, his kids, had been in numerous motor vehicle accidents, et cetera, and was really on a track, if you will, to take his life. He came to Braveheart as a basically a last-ditch effort, and I've heard that a lot. I've heard that from a lot of veterans. They tell me they come to Braveheart because really nothing else has worked in the past. Anyways, this individual came to us in about a year's time. He made amends and became sober and had really connected with the horses. And he talked a lot about our Mustang program. We have a wild horse program where we partner veterans with wild horses. And that's a whole moving process in itself. But he really talks about how this one particular wild horse reached deep into his soul like no one and no drug and no therapy had ever done and really got and held his attention. But in about a year and a half's time, this individual had not only turned his whole life around, but he became certified to teach at Bravehearts. And we're a premier accredited center to do what we do. And this gentleman had made such massive strides in his horsemanship and his passion, and also as far as his commitment to service, not only in his time that he'd already done in the military, but now looking to how he could help his brothers going forward. And so he wanted to become certified to teach so that he could teach other veterans who would be coming to Bravehearts who would have been in the same situation he was.
Megan, if someone wants to learn more about your organization, how can they find you?
You can check us out online at braveheartsriding.org. And it's Bravehearts is plural, Bravehearts and then riding, R-I-D-I-N-G.org. We also have a Facebook page. It's also Bravehearts Therapeutic Riding.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Megan Hill McQueenie with Bravehearts Therapeutic Riding and Educational Center. Megan, thank you for being a guest on our program and for what you're doing with the veterans.
Thank you so much, Joe. God bless.
While attention is focused on the partial government shutdown and congressional dysfunction, much has actually been accomplished. Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has details on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Governor Wolf was sworn in for a second term in Harrisburg, calling for lawmakers to look toward building a Pennsylvania for the future. I couldn't agree more that what Pennsylvania needs is a big, bold vision for a future of active economic growth where every single Pennsylvanian has the opportunity to live their best life, and each community across our Commonwealth, large and small, can thrive as citizens succeed by helping others succeed. This year, Americans for Prosperity will seek new opportunities to help Harrisburg break down barriers and drive visionary reforms that make Pennsylvania more competitive for businesses and citizens. That work will happen in local communities around the Commonwealth as our grassroots teams knock on doors, talk to citizens, and engage community leaders to work together to make changes that improve lives. Can it work? Indeed it can. When citizens work together to build a movement in support of good policies at the state and federal level, anything is possible. Here are five examples of how our work together made an impact over the last year. Number one, lawmakers increase public safety and grant second chances by passing the First Step Act. The bipartisan criminal justice reform legislation that was passed by Congress on December 20th and signed into law by President Trump the very next day was an important reform at the national level. The First Step Act will increase public safety, reduce crime, save taxpayer dollars, and help incarcerated individuals who want a second chance to become successful, law-abiding citizens. Right here in Pennsylvania, the Clean Slate Bill, signed by Governor Wolf and supported by bipartisan leaders, will give many deserving citizens a second chance by clearing records of misdemeanors that happened more than a decade ago. We have a chance to get people back to work that will save taxpayer dollars and help our economy grow. Number two, qualified judges take the federal bench. More than 65 fair and qualified judicial nominees have been confirmed this last year. With nearly 150 vacancies in our federal courts, confirming judges who are committed to interpreting the law as written is critical. Confirm judges, who AFP proudly supported, include Judge David Porter from Pennsylvania, Judge Andrew Oldham in Texas, Judge Michael Brennan in Wisconsin, and of course, now Justice Brett Kavanaugh, who was confirmed to the Supreme Court. Supporting the rule of law and upholding the Constitution should continue to be our goal. Number three, regulatory reforms bring relief. This year, lawmakers passed policies that help cut red tape for Americans across the country. For example, when the Economic Growth, Regulatory Relief, and Consumer Protection Act became law in May, it eased the burdens of harmful banking regulations imposed under Dodd-Frank that forced smaller banks to pass down costs to their consumers. This hurt local banks that loan to small businesses across Pennsylvania. Regulatory reform is crucial, and right here in Pennsylvania, we have the opportunity to pass new regulatory reform to free up our economy. We've seen what has happened at the federal level when unnecessary regulations are no longer barriers to success. Let's keep working to make that happen in Pennsylvania this year. Number four, terminally ill patients get right to try. In May, President Donald Trump signed right to try legislation that helped remove barriers to potentially life-saving experimental treatments that have not received final FDA approval. The government should not stop terminally ill patients from making decisions for themselves. And Donald Trump signed that law to give patients a right to try experimental treatments. Number five, tax reform continues to generate growth. Federal tax reform was passed a year ago, but Pennsylvania families and businesses continue to experience its rewards. Bigger paychecks and expanded benefits at work are signs of a booming economy and are allowing hardworking people to better provide for their families. Let's bring that same success to Pennsylvania by making big, bold tax reforms together this year. The new year will bring many more opportunities to help people across Pennsylvania improve their lives. You can join our effort at www.afppennsylvania.com. I'm Beth Ann Mumford, State Director at Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, lincolnradiojournal.com and lincolninstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WWBE-FM and WFYY-FM in Selins Grove, along with WISL-AM in Shamokin, Pennsylvania. And it is time to begin talking about the annual Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. This year is the 30th anniversary Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, which will be held April 5th and 6th at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. This year's featured speaker will be Wall Street Journal columnist and commentator Kimberly Strassel. Jimmy Kemp of the Jack Kemp Foundation and numerous others will also speak. There will be panel presentations on key state and national issues, workshops, and the opportunity to network with conservatives from across the state. To learn more and register for the 2019 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, go to paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. All of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.